Welcome back to the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I have an amazing episode for you today, so make sure you listen the whole way through. I speak with Inner Circle member Erica, and we speak all about how to resolve hunger, especially hunger as the day progresses. A lot of people struggle with not really being hungry earlier in the day, but as the day gets later and later and later and into the nighttime, they really struggle with being able to fill up and not go to bed super hungry. This is what Erica has been struggling with, and in this episode, we talk about how she can resolve that hunger and the steps she can take to start building a healthier relationship with food, but also to not go to bed super hungry every single night. I hope you enjoy the episode. If you do, please leave a 5-star review on iTunes. And if you'd like to join the Inner Circle, you can do that at the link in the show notes. Have a wonderful day. Let's get into it. Erica, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yes.
Amazing. All right. So this is where we pretend like we didn't just talk for a couple seconds beforehand. So you were saying you've got kids, you got doctor's appointment, you have a busy day ahead, huh?
Yeah. Well, we already did the doctor's appointment. I booted my husband and my kids and my mother-in-law out of the house for an hour, so I could have some silence because, you know, good luck getting a couple of boys to can it for a while.
Yeah. How many kids do you have?
Just two. One is 9 and one is 6, surrounded by boys. So it's okay. Good.
you have 2 young boys, 9 and 6-year-old boys.
Yeah, I totally do. They're a ton of fun. I thought at first that I would want girls, but after having boys, I'm like, I'll just take boys. It's totally good. I'm good at that. Yeah.
I was just going to ask that because, you know, my new wife and I are obviously talking about when that might be a possibility. And my mind immediately goes to like, oh man, do I want boys? Do I want girls? And I would imagine every parent before they have kids would think about what they'd want. Right? Like, is that what you thought before? Like, you thought you wanted girls?
Yes. Well, because I had my sisters all had, I mean, there's a mix of boys and girls, but the first child for 2 of my sisters was girls, and I knew girls well, obviously, you know. So I don't know. I wanted girls, and at the initial, when you find out the gender of the baby, which we did because I'm a bit of a control spaz, I need to kind of know what's going on. I had that moment of disappointment. And I'm like, you know what? No, you want healthy. It doesn't matter. Boy, girl, you want healthy. That's what you want. So.
And has anything surprised you about having boys?
Every day is a surprise having boys. I'd be like, you know, I say to my husband, you need to deal with this because I don't think that I can. So you figure it out. At least I have him. I've got him. It's good. It's good. Yeah.
Good. Good. And do you think you want more or is 2 plenty?
2's good. 2's good. I'm done. I wasn't the most, and this sort of ties into, I guess it will tie into the whole conversation. I wasn't the healthiest pregnant person. And I thought after 1 that I would stop, like, I can't do this again. Pregnancy was super difficult. There was all kinds of complications, but, you look at your child and you're like, no, you need a sibling. You need somebody to hate your parents with at certain stages in your life, you know? So you need somebody to turn to have in the hard times. So I did it again for my son. And I'm so glad that I did it again because now I've got 2 and they're good. They're great. They're tons of fun.
That's amazing. I love that. I've never had this conversation before. So, I mean, I was selfishly very interested, but that makes a lot of sense. So, yeah. So let's get into the rest of the discussion. I saw your email, but I want you to just start from the beginning, tell me everything, and I'll see how I can help.
Okay. Sounds good. I'm super bad at talking about myself. So I'm just going to put that in as a little disclaimer. I'm not good at it. So I will do my best. And if I'm not making sense or I need to clarify something, just let me know.
You do your best. I'm sure you're great. And if I need to ask any more questions, I'll probe a little bit and we'll dig around, but I'm sure it's going to be fine.
Okay. So we'll start back probably to 2018. Yeah, it was at my heaviest point. I was 260 pounds in 2018. Currently standing this morning, I was 175.5. Here. So the first thing I did when I decided that I wanted to lose weight was cut out drinking Coca-Cola. Like, I have been drinking Coca-Cola since I've been 9 years old. 9 years old, I can remember slugging back can after can after can. And I remember going out as a teenager, and most teenagers and kids, they drank whatever was put in front of them. I would have a can of Coke in each pocket. and I would head down the stairs and we would go out for the day or whatever, but it was a really terrible addiction. So that was the first thing I dropped. I got a soda stream and I just drink sparkling water all the time. Even to this day, I need that carbonation, but there's no flavor. There's no calories. There's no nothing in it. So, that was the first thing I did. And the only change that I made for the first year, and 30 pounds wow. came off on their own, 30 pounds from June to June, just no melted way. Off on its own. Yeah. A full 30 pounds. I did nothing else. Nothing.
That's nothing crazy. Else. Needed like no adding exercise. No, it was literally just, I'm going to stop drinking Coke.
I'm just stopping drinking. I did try to pick up exercise. I did have a friend of mine approach me about a very popular workout company. and I tried and I didn't go well. I was 260 pounds. It was tough mm-hmm. on my joints, and I couldn't get past how much muscle soreness I had. And I was thinking to myself, like, how the blazes do these people do this day after day after day? I literally, you trust fall to the toilet, you trust fall down the stairs, you're holding on for dear life trying to get down the stairs without totally bailing, and it was impossible. So I'd pick it up and I'd drop it. I'd pick it up and I'd drop it. And I didn't successfully get through even a week or two of working out. So I just let it go. I knew my limitations, and I wasn't educated on, you know, DOMS and stuff like that, but I am now, so it's better. But so dropping the Coke, I didn't change my exercise. I didn't change my eating habits. I changed nothing other than just letting go of Coca-Cola. It's incredible, incredible how much weight just came off on its own, more or less without me noticing, because it was such a gradual thing.
Was that an easy change for you to make? Were there like cravings? Like, what was it, difficult? Was it easy? Talk to me about that.
It was, I don't remember it being difficult, because I was ready. I was ready to let it go. And, you know, I hated that I had that attachment to it, the emotional attachment to it, the mental attachment, the full-on sugar addiction. I hated that. And I wanted to get over it. And then I realized it wasn't actually the Coca-Cola. It was the carbonation that I crave so much. And even to this day, I need that palate cleansing fizz thing. I always need that. So it wasn't a difficult transition. It wasn't a hard thing to drop, because I had something to replace it. So it was fine. I didn't notice sugar withdrawals, probably because I was still eating sugar elsewhere. Mm-hmm. But just the extra added, gosh, who knows, 1,000 calories a day in Coca-Cola. It's the pounds just melted off on their own.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
And then after that, I sat stagnant about 230 pounds. I'm 5'5" for context, if that helps. 5'5", 38 years old, started at 260, dropped down to 230. I'm 38 years old now, pardon me. So then I sat still at 230 pounds and I picked my workouts back up at that point. And again, like the muscle soreness was, it is gripping. It is so hard when you're first starting. You yeah. just have to, and I was not, I was very, very, very hard on myself, as we all kind of are at times. And, you know, you push through and you push through and you push through. And it took me, so the first year was the dropping of the Coca-Cola. The second year was adding in the exercise and starting to pay attention to what I was eating. It was such a slow process, Jordan. It was so slow. Like, just add this and add that and add this. But I was noticing what I was eating. I was by no stretch counting calories, because, as you know, most of the people that you speak to, I hate counting calories. It makes me so angry. Even to this day, it makes me so angry. Like, how dare you tell me I can't have that tablespoon of almond butter right now? How dare you? So I wasn't counting calories, but I was paying attention to what was going in. I would glance at calories in the back of packages sometimes and realize things like just a tortilla that you're wrapping your stuff up in can account for a lot of your calories for the day. And it was pretty eye-opening experience, the whole thing. So as I started to become more consistent with getting 2 to 3 workouts in a week and then 3 to 4 workouts in a week, I would pay more attention to what was going in my body, et cetera, et cetera. So then bring me to, I don't know, what was the next bunch of timeline? I take it year by year from June to June. So this last June, this last stretch of time, I've paid way more attention to what's going in, and I've done a lot of research in nutrition just on my own, what, you know, what the Google machine can possibly tell me, which there's a lot of stuff out there. It's a pretty smart world. you know, and so I joined the Inner Circle, I think, 4 months ago. I've been following you guys a lot longer than that, but finally took that leap. And, you know, I'm dragging my husband with me. I'm dragging my best friend with me. I'm like, come on, guys, like, get on this train. And I've just been watching my calories. Mentally, I'm better at counting calories now than I used to be. I have a little book. It's a Harry Potter book, so it's partially a happy book, but what's inside is very unhappy. It's all with my calorie counting. I write the date. I write, you know, what I write to have breakfast and coffee. Coffee is my biggest vice. There's always that one thing that people will not let go of. And for now, I'm not ready to let go of my, you know, coffee cream and a little bit of sugar. And I'm not there yet. So I over count for my coffee in the morning. I give it 200 calories, although I know it's not, but sometimes I can over pour on the cream anyway. But that little Harry Potter book has all my days of calorie counting in it. And I've got to the point where I know now what, you know, what this snack looks like, what that snack looks like, and this, and I can do it all in my head without having to torture myself with my Harry Potter book. So I'm not super duper consistent with weighing. And I don't have a problem with the scale. I don't particularly enjoy the numbers, but they're just numbers, like you say, and like I've learned so much from you. It's just data. It's just data. It pays such a, you know, paints such a small portion of the picture. You know, so I don't have too much of a problem with the scale, but I do know that if I've been eating like an asshole, which is one of my favorite things to say, I love that so much. I recognize it. And it was my son's birthday on the 24th. So I've been eating like a dickhead for a good 3 days. Now there's cake in this house, and cake is a problem. So what I do with the scale when I know that the numbers are going to climb is I just don't step on it for a few days until my clothes feel like they felt a few days ago. I don't torture myself by getting on that scale because I know it's not going to tell me the truth. So I just move beyond it. But I'm totally getting off track. The first year I dropped.
This is all super good. This is also, it's great.
The second year, I was paying more attention to workouts and I was paying more attention to nutrition. And moving into my third year now, I'm really kind of tuned into everything that I put in my body. And I do give myself some grace and give myself some love and try to do the same thing to the people around me to bring them with me. And I do willingly jump face first off the wagon sometimes. Like I know around my son's birthday that there's things I want to enjoy. There's cakes I want to have. There's memories I want to make. And unfortunately, as humans, we're super social and food is a part of that. So we just, you know, I enjoy the day or the event or whatever. And then I pick up and move on. Working out is really consistent. I'm super consistent with it. I'm not good at, you know, Monday workout, Tuesday take off, Wednesday workout, Thursday take off. I'm not good at that. So I go 2 days and break and then 3 days and break. I just need, it's almost like a bit of a running start and then a slow and then another running start and then a slow down. That's the way that I find I'm most successful.
Amazing.
But I do get a couple of good rest days in a week. And definitely if I feel like, you know, for one day I'm just awkward, you know, sore, like so sore, my glutes were so sore the other day. I don't know what I did. I don't know which one it was. Who knows? I take a break. I take a break, or I just do something else and move. I just switch my workouts a little bit, but working out's consistent. Calorie counting I can do in my head, but I am so hungry. I am almost never full. This was the original question, like the original thing that I had asked. I am good at maintaining my hunger through the day. You know, I have coffee, I have breakfast, although my best friend would tell me that you don't eat enough like in one meal because I hate calorie counting and this all plays into it. I know how much egg whites, tomatoes, and a small bowl of bran cereal is. I know how much cottage cheese and like a little Greek salad with light dressing. I know mentally how many calories that is. I don't have to write it down. So I have these little snacks through the day. And by the time I reach dinner time, I'm only sitting at about 1,000 calories. So by the time 3:30 hits, I'm done my workout. I've had some form of protein or some form of after workout snack. I put food in front of me, I'm going to eat it. Like I'm hungry. I'm so hungry. And I will eat beyond my 18 or 19 800 calories I have left for the day, I'll eat beyond that because I'm so hungry. And even through the snacks, for the most part, I'm just never full. I'm never full. And I crave that full belly feeling that I think a lot of people do. I'm never full. I'm just not hungry anymore. And it's I don't know. It's a tricky situation. It's a bit of a dance for me for sure, but it's frustrating because I hate feeling hungry. Most people hate feeling hungry.
Yeah. Being hungry is not a fun, no one's really like, yes, I love feeling hungry. Like, no, it's not like a great feeling to have at all. You explained all of that perfectly, by the way. Like at the beginning, you said you're not good at speaking about yourself. That was literally perfect. It was everything was wonderful. So there are many ways we can go from here, but I think, and tell me if I'm wrong, the main thing that needs to be fixed is the hunger, the constant hunger, right? Is that like the main focus?
It is. For me, it is, because I'm super duper hungry. And I have a husband who's, you know, he's 6'3", he's 245 pounds. His caloric needs are definitely different than
yes.
mine. And the guy's
yes.
solid. Like, he's a big dude. He lifts and whatever. So his calorie needs are higher. Now he's sitting there and eating, and I'm like, oh, I hate you. I'm so hungry. How's all that food treating you, huh? Dying in the corner. Oh my gosh. So it's tough being around food. I mean, I have a fair amount of self-control, but there's I don't know, I'm just hungry, so this is the problem. Yes.
Yeah. So there are a number of things you said that caught my attention. The first thing I want to discuss is the thing that you said that really caught my attention was you said your friend might tell you that your meals are very small, something like that, you're not ever eating really very much. And I found that very telling. Before I say anything, just tell me about that. Like who is this friend and why do they say that?
She's, they're our best friends in Texas, actually. They live in San Antonio. My husband's originally from Texas, Dallas, Texas. He lived there for a long time.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I know. So it was really cool when you were moving to Dallas. I'm like, oh, sweet. He's so close to you guys there. It's ridiculous. So we spend... They're our best friends and we spend a ton of time on FaceTime. I basically just carry them around the house and we go through our day together and whatever. So there's not a whole heck of a lot we don't know about each other. And there's not a whole heck of a lot she realizes when I'm eating that I'm not actually eating very much. You know, it's half a cup of cottage cheese and it's a couple of rice cakes. And I know how much everybody loves rice cakes. And to be honest, I like the tomato basil ones are so good. And you know what? It's because and I'm looking at your Instagram, so I'm killing myself laughing. I'm like, I really do like rice cakes.
I got a fair number of people being like, you clearly haven't tried the tomato basil ones yet.
Oh, they're, you know what? As far, you know, it's not good like a donut is good. It's not good like a Big Mac is good. But as far as, you know, low calorie snacks,
yeah.
they're good.
Yeah.
It's all about perspective.
Like, it's worth the crunch, right? Like it provides a good crunch and a good sort of like the carbonation in seltzer, right? It's not like Coke, but like the carbonation, it gives you that feeling in your palate that like it quenches something. Same thing with that crunch.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. So that, you know, she realizes when I'm having snacks that I'm not eating a lot. And I also won't be completely honest with her when I'm not eating that much because I know I'm going to be hungry later. Like, no, I'm fine. I'm totally full. I'm not. I'm never full. I'm never full. It's ridiculous. So my snacks are pretty small. It's obvious that I'm not eating probably enough through the day. This is another thing. So my deficit, I want to be 150 pounds again. It's just a number, like who actually gives a crap at the end of the day, as long as you're healthy, but I'm a pretty solid person. And I think that 150 pounds is a bit of a pipe dream. I think I'll be pretty cut at 150 pounds. I think it's not realistic because I'm 175 pounds now. And to look at me, I don't really have a ton of body fat to lose. So I'm going to shoot for like 100 and maybe 165 pounds and see where I'm at there and just kind of see how she goes. I still eat for 150 pounds because if I raise my calories, if I'm not in enough of a deficit, my body stops responding. So if I eat for 150 pounds, so it's 1800 calories, my body weight will come down half pound a week, pretty, you know, fair, sustainable-ish. If I eat for 165 pounds, if that were my goal weight, my body weight does not move. It's really strange. My body's like, no, that's like, I don't know. I just don't know. But again, like, so I don't, my food is not enough. My meals are not enough. She notices it in the back of my head. I know it. But it's that block. It's the same thing. Like, I just listened to the podcast you did with Minnie the other day. And I was just like, wow, this girl's super close to me. She's in Vancouver and I'm on Vancouver Island. And I'm like, we're just like little kindred spirits here, because I totally get her. Like, I totally get her. You're nervous to eat more, because I know what my body does if I eat beyond 1800 calories. It just hangs on to every little bit it possibly can. Yeah.
So that makes total sense. It's also what a blessing to have such a friend that will be honest with you like that.
Yeah.
Right. Rather than just not saying anything at all. I always really think it's important to take note of that, because I think the best friends in life will be the ones who will tell you the hard things, not the people who will sort of just let it pass by without saying anything. It also speaks volumes that you also know that, like, you know, your portions are small. Let me ask you this. Do you think that you are saving calories for later in the day because you don't want to go to bed hungry?
You did ask me this, and at the time I'm like, no, I don't think that I do that. But the more that I sit and think about it, I think subconsciously I do this, because I'm not, from when I get up in the morning until about 3:30, I'm not super hungry. I'm just not that. My husband wakes up starving every single day, and he's the guy that needs to have his big breakfast meal. I don't need that. But I still know that I don't eat enough. I don't say, no, just get your food in, get your body fueled, and off you go. I just eat until I eat because I have to, and I eat because it's a bit of a chore. I know that I should be eating more when I do eat in the morning and at lunchtime, but I just simply don't. Part of me is not hungry, and part of me doesn't really want to at the same time. So originally when you had asked me that, I'm like, no, I don't save calories. I don't not eat because I know I'm going to be hungry later. But I think, like, having some time to think about it subconsciously, I might be doing that thing. Yep.
Well, let me ask you this, because you said you're constantly hungry. When are you constantly hungry?
Well, so not in the morning. I shouldn't actually say I'm constantly hungry. Not in the morning. So probably 3:30 to 10 o'clock, always hungry, constantly hungry. That's guaranteed every single day, 7 days a week. There are times, it depends on how my training is going, that I wake up hungry. And if I start to try to train my body to, you need to have your breakfast, you need to have your lunch, like, you need to fuel your body. If I do that and I start eating too early, so if I crawl out of bed at 6:15, I'm like, okay, I'm starting to get hungry at about 8 o'clock. If I start eating early, I'm hungry all day long. All day long. So I try not to start my engine too early, because I know that I want to eat everything that's not tied down. I've said that to her, even my friend Sarah that I was talking about, I've said it to her on the phone. I'm like, if I start eating now, like, I'm going to be ravenous all day long. So I sort of push it back. So now that I'm saying this and these words are coming out of my mouth, I fully do it on purpose.
Yeah.
I fully do it on purpose. Oh my gosh. Unbelievable.
I'm sitting here smiling like shit.
You do. Oh, that's embarrassing.
And it's so funny. Like, that's one of the reasons I love these conversations. People will often say things and they won't realize that they're doing the exact thing that they're saying they're not doing. And that's why I love these conversations, because it's sort of like, through that discussion, you're like, oh my God, I'm literally doing exactly what I said I wasn't doing, type of thing. So that's perfect. Now I'm going to give an example here, that's similar, but not 100% the same. One of the biggest issues that people have, and I'm not saying you have this, I'm just going to give an example that might help make sense. People who struggle with binge eating, often what they'll do is they'll binge eat at night. And then what they do is the following day is like, oh, well, since I ate so much last night, I have to not eat all day today. And they think the way to resolve the binge is by not eating all next day, and maybe even over exercising to burn off all those calories. But the issue is that then leads to another binge, because then they didn't eat the entire day, they overexercise, and it's that is what's causing the subsequent binge. The way to solve the binge eating problem, or one way, is it's not to fast or starve yourself or to overexercise. It's to immediately start eating more the next day and get right back on track, because that is what puts the plug in it. That's what stops you from then binging later on that night. And it's a very oversimplified way of saying it. It's not saying, okay, well, immediately your binging is going to be over and you're not going to struggle with it anymore. But if you make this a regular habit, you will eventually get to a point where your body and mind stops binging, because you've stopped that cycle of essentially purging the following day. Mm-hmm. The same thing goes with exactly what you're talking about, which is this chronic hunger that comes at nighttime, where what's happening is you anticipate this intense hunger at night, so you deliberately eat less during the day in order to save up, because you know you're going to be super hungry. The instinctive, intuitive response is, well, then I'm just going to keep saving calories for nighttime. But that's actually the biggest problem, because the more you do that, the more you're going to try and eat less and less and less during the day, and the more you're going to try and save up for your nighttime, and you're never going to be able to satisfy that hunger. It will actually chronically make it worse and worse and worse. The only way to actually help this is to start. It doesn't mean you have to start your day with a 1,000-calorie breakfast. That's not what I'm saying. It does mean that if you notice yourself starting to get hungrier around 3, then I would say probably around somewhere between 8 to 10, you should have a hearty breakfast. So it doesn't have to be 1,000 calories. But I would say at least 300 to 500 calories, somewhere between 8 and 10, another 300 to 500 calories somewhere between like 12 and 2. And I guarantee you, if you do this for at least 2 to 4 weeks, you're going to start to notice your hunger at night diminishing dramatically. And I say that 2 to 4 week time frame on purpose, because hunger hormones – you can't change your hunger response in a day. You can't change very much in life in a matter of a day. You, like, when you stopped drinking Coke, you didn't all of a sudden lose 30 pounds in a day. It took a year, but it was that one change, that one small change that over a long time made a big difference. Yeah. This is another small change that over time will make a big difference. And generally, if you look in the research, hunger hormones can take about 2 to 4 weeks to really start to make a permanent change. So what I found is if you make this change, you have two meals prior to about 3 o'clock, within a month, you're going to start noticing your nighttime hunger is dramatically diminished, and that chronic hunger, and almost it becomes not even a fully stomach hunger. Some of it becomes a mental and emotional hunger, like 100%. this fear of going to bed hungry, this like fear of not ever of being satisfied, right? Like there's almost this comfortability that comes from feeling stuffed, and we want to diminish that. We don't want you to have to rely on feeling stuffed in order to feel comfortable to go to bed. Because even then, like, you're not happy about it. You're not like super stoked. Oh, great. I'm stuffed to the point of my gills right now where I've just ate 2,000 calories. Like, mm-hmm. It usually has a feeling of guilt associated with it. And then following the next day, where you're like, okay, well, I've got to starve myself now because I know I'm gonna be hungrier again later on. So we've got to plug that part and plug that leak right there. And that leak is not eating earlier in the day. We've got to stop that immediately.
Okay. I've got little notes. I'm just making little notes because I don't forget everything you just said.
Does that make sense? Do you have any questions on that?
No, I don't. And it does make sense. It's literally something I've just been super nervous to do, and I didn't know that the hunger hormones, the 2 to 4 weeks about the hunger hormones, I didn't even factor that in as a thing. Like, I didn't know about hunger hormones. I still don't know. And now once we get off the call, I'm going to start looking it up.
So if you want to look at specific hormones, you can look at ghrelin. I always misspell it. It's either G-R-E-H-L-I-N or like G-R-H-E-L-I-N. Ghrelin is a very important one. Leptin is another really important one. Peptide YY is another one, but generally it will take about 2 to 4 weeks for any serious changes to take place, which is why, for example, let's say someone, and I'm, this is the opposite of what you're about to do, but let's say someone is like, let's say I'm working with someone who's a shift worker. They work late at night, or maybe they're a truck driver, or someone who would actually make sense to do intermittent fasting based on their job. Oftentimes when they start doing it, they'll still be really hungry earlier in the day. But I'll say, listen, if we want to see if this is a good lifestyle for you, just give it 2 to 4 weeks so that your hunger hormones have enough time to adjust. And then you'll be able to see, okay, is this actually beneficial for your schedule or not? Another really good example of this is, I'm sure whether it's Thanksgiving or Christmas or Hanukkah or a holiday, you might have eaten a lot at a certain point in the day. And then like after that meal, you're stuffed, you feel gross. You're like, oh, there's no way I'm gonna eat for a week. But then like 4 hours later, all of a sudden you're hungry again. Like, what the hell is wrong with me? How in the hell could I be hungry after all I ate? And that's because like your hunger hormones work on a schedule. So if you eat at certain times on a regular basis, then your hunger hormones will consistently get you, they'll cause you to get hungry around the same time. Incredible. So it also makes sense. This is why it consistently gets worse. If you consistently don't eat early in the day and save and save and save for later in the day, it will continue to get worse and worse and worse, because you'll end up saving more and more and more and more calories, and you're going to expect to eat more and more and more later in the day, which is means you're going to get hungrier and hungrier and hungrier at night. Which is why I'm so glad we're having this call now, because we can put a plug in that leak, stop that, start eating earlier in the day. And within a month, 2 months, like, you're going to start noticing it's much more of a normalized hunger pattern.
Right. That's awesome. This is just triggered a memory of mine, actually, because fresh out of high school, I worked overnight at Walmart as I stocked the shelves, and my lunchtime was 3 a.m. When I stopped working there, I woke up for months at 3 a.m. Hungry. I was starving 3 a.m. And I'm like, seriously? Like, how long is this going to take to go away? It took a couple of months for it to finally level out. But it's just something that I haven't thought about since I've been in my late teens. And it's really interesting. It's really cool.
Actually also very good for me to know, and for you to know, everyone's different, right? Some people, they're like, for me, my hunger hormones might react more quickly. So maybe within 3 to 7 days, I'm adjusted. For you, it might be closer to 6 to 8 weeks. And everyone is different. There's so much we don't know about hunger. It's actually pretty incredible. We know a fair amount, and research is consistently coming out, but there's a lot we don't know about hunger. So it might be for you that, hey, maybe it'll take 8 weeks for it to be fully adjusted. But either way, you have to keep that in mind. As long as you continue to eat earlier in the day, have like at least 300 to 500 calories, somewhere between 8 to 10, 300 to 500 calories between 12 to 2, I think it's going to be a great schedule for you to fall back on.
Okay. Got that written down. I've got the hormones written down. Going to do some digging. And you did say something else earlier that I wanted to touch on. I was one of those people, and I fight the urge to do it. I don't do it anymore, but I do fight the urge to do it when I, you know, quote unquote, punished myself for, you know, eating whatever it is that I chose to eat. Once I watched what I was eating, if I had what I deemed to be a bad food, I would work out extra hard or longer. I would definitely do that. It was a really crappy mental space to be in. I recognize it now. But I was one of those people that definitely did 2 to 3 workouts in a day because I felt like I overate to try and to compensate for the amount of calories that I did. And fitness, like just overall health, it is a journey. It is a journey. And you look back on your years or your months, even depends on how long you've been in it, but you recognize your not so healthy points. And yeah, it's an emotional one. That's for sure.
it's so emotional. It's so mental. It's one of the reasons why when I was in college, I originally went in for exercise science. I was really lucky because at that point, by the time I got to college, I had already been coaching people for about 5 years. I got my first internship at 14 years old. And I realized through that internship, through coaching people for like 5 years, I was like, it doesn't matter how good of a program someone has on paper. It doesn't matter how much knowledge they have about nutrition, about training. If they don't have the mental side figured out first and foremost, none of it will matter. but it does not. And so you have to understand the psychological component, the behavioral component. So it literally, after about 2.5 months of being in exercise science, I switched, I dropped out and I went to behavioral psychology because I was like, it doesn't matter. If you've got the perfect sets and reps, if you've got the perfect macro split, none of that matters if you don't get your head right first. This is, it's all mental and psychological.
Yep. It 100% is. It's, and I, when I picked up working out and I dropped it, I just wasn't ready. Like, I just wasn't ready. And eventually I hit that point where I just was ready. And like anything else in life, you have to be mentally ready to do this. You might not physically be ready, you might not financially be ready, but your headspace, you're ready, you're gonna do it. And I haven't quit in like the 2.5 years I've been at it. So it's been great.
I'm actually really glad you reminded me of that, because when you said it, I made a mental note to come back to it and I completely forgot. Earlier you said exactly that. You said that you got to a point in which you were ready to make a change, and you were specifically referring to stopping drinking regular Coke. Do you remember what happened? Like, why were you all of a sudden ready? And what did that feel like mentally, emotionally? Was it a life circumstance? Was it fear? What was going on that you were like, hey, I'm ready to do this?
I'm such an emotional person, Jordan, and I remember, and this may be super inappropriate to say, I don't know, but I remember
it's inappropriate. Nothing is there.
I remember standing in front of the mirror, and I would do it so often, and I would hate myself, and I would hit myself, and I was so pissed at what I had become. And I'm like, my husband's never going to be able to pick me up. Like, he's never going to be able to just pick me up the way that I want to feel feminine, and I want to feel whatever it is that I want to feel. And I knew I was never going to feel that way. And I hated it. And I'm like, okay, something's got to give. What can I get rid of? Like, what? And like, the first thing is the red can was the first thing that came to my head. And I'm like, okay, like, here we go. And I would spend not tons of time, but I can, you know, remember so many moments where I'd stand in front of the mirror and just hate what I saw, and having no idea how I got there, and not blaming it on life circumstance. These are my choices. Like, these are the things that I did, the choices that I made, the food that I chose to get me to this point. And pregnancy is no walk in the park. Like, it's hard, but you know, I'm not going to blame my children for me being 260 pounds, you know, like, that's not going to happen. And, you know, pregnancies are all different and women respond differently and, you know, life happens, but I did. I just stood in front of the mirror so often and just hated what I saw and wanted my husband to be able to pick me up and make me feel, again, like, it's kind of silly and a lot of people may shake their heads at it, but I just wanted something that I've literally never had, because I can recall being in seventh grade and being made fun of because I weighed 100 pounds in seventh grade. I remember specifically who it was, what her face was, and what she said to me. So, you know, how old are you in seventh grade? 12. Like, I can remember that far back, just being bullied ruthlessly for being heavier. And I don't remember the day specifically, but I definitely remember what went through my head, and just wanted something that I've never, ever had. I've never remembered a time where I was small and felt feminine or felt, you know, whatever. So those were my driving forces. And literally the thing that drives me the hardest is being small enough that my 6'3" husband can wrap his arms fully around me and make me feel small and protected and whatever. Like, it, again, it sounds a little bit silly to say it out loud.
Honestly, but like, I'm sitting here and I want you to know that that doesn't sound silly at all. What it sounds like is the truth.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're telling the truth. And, I don't even know how to articulate how much I appreciate you just being fully honest, because I feel like, especially nowadays, most people might feel that way, but none of them would be confident or brave enough to say that's how they felt. And in the society that we live in today, I am just so appreciative that you are willing to say that, because if that's how you felt, then say it. And it's not silly at all. It makes all the sense in the world, and I love that you're willing to share that, because I think I think you're going to help inspire other people who might be feeling that way, but maybe suppressing those feelings or pushing them away because they're being told that they shouldn't have them for whatever reason. I think you're actually going to help a lot of people to make positive changes in their life.
I appreciate that. And it's hard to say it without like bursting into tears because again, I'm super duper emotional. It's ridiculous. It's one of those things that paints me as me. It's just the way that I am. But you know, we're so, especially women, you know, you stand up on your own two feet. You don't need this and you don't need to be that. And you do it for yourself and you know, whatever. Like yes, I'm absolutely getting healthy for myself, but the driving force, was a bit more of what I deem as a silly reason. And then, you know, on the back burner is I want to be here for my kids and I want to like, whatever, like these are all good, solid reasons. But first and foremost, it was all of that stuff that made me start. So here I am working on it.
And look at how, I mean, would you say that it's improved your life?
Oh gosh. And you don't even notice how much it improves your life until you stop and you go, holy smokes. Like one day my husband wrapped his arms around me and he whispered in my ear, he said, I can grab my elbows like before. And it's just, again, something so silly, but you know, normally, you know, he wraps his arms around me. He's just got his hands crossed or whatever. Like he could one day, all of a sudden, just around his arms went and he could hold on to both his elbows on either side. And I remember it. And it was just a moment. It was like a milestone for me. Not the one that I ever thought would be a milestone, but what he said that day, I was like, holy crap, this is working. Like I'm making this work for me. And you know, I don't know, gosh, it's so freaking emotional.
can't argue with that, right? You can't argue with that. It's, I don't think it's a silly reason at all. I think it's important to you. And that's what's important. Mm-hmm. Period. Mm-hmm. Period. And, yeah, and it's caused you to make so many positive changes in your life. For me, it's like, I'm over the moon happy hearing this. This just, it makes me super, super excited and proud and unbelievably impressed and very grateful that you're willing to have this discussion with me. Cause it's, when I say it's going to help thousands of people, I mean, it's literally going to help thousands and thousands of people.
That's good. And I debated whether or not, and again, my best friend, Sarah, I said, you know, like I was invited to do a podcast, but I don't think that I have anything worth talking about. Like I don't, what the heck do I have to say that anybody would possibly want to hear or want to listen to? But I guess everybody, there's something in everybody's story that ignites a fire in somebody. So
everybody's got us. I was just talking with my buddy Mike about this. I was asking him what kind of books he likes. Cause I'm like, I've always been big on World War II and I've been reading a lot of history books lately, but you know, he was telling me he's big on biographies and autobiographies. I mean, it's one of the biggest genres out there. And that's what so many podcasts are, is just listening to people's stories. We've all got a story, every single person. And I think we often take for granted how impactful our own story can be and how much we can take from what we've been through and what we've learned. And it's one of the reasons I consider myself very lucky and blessed to have these conversations with you and people like you, because we live in a society that really glamorizes quote unquote influencers and fame and popularity. And it's like, you don't have to have a lot of followers to be an impactful individual at all. Like your number of followers means absolutely nothing. And I think a lot of times we can get down on ourselves because we look at other people with huge audiences and just think, oh, what, like they must be living the best life, an amazing life. And look at me, like it's irrelevant how many followers, whether you have social media or not, like every individual has an amazing story to tell. And, I'm just very lucky that you were willing to chat with me. And I hope that you found this helpful.
Yes, it definitely. And you know, it's part of it I already knew, but I didn't. It literally took me speaking those words to you and then stopping. And I was like, wow. You know, that's what you're doing. You just had to say it out loud and get somebody to like drag the words out of your mouth. So it's good. It's actually really, really easy to talk to you. And I didn't think that it was going to be difficult because I'm not a particularly shy person, but because I see your face every day and I hear your voice every day repeatedly, it's just like I don't know. It's like thousands and thousands of people are super comfortable with you and you don't even know it. That's really cool.
Is there anything else that you wanted to discuss? Is there any, because I want to, like, we've got, still got plenty of time. Is there anything else you want to chat about? Like, because I want to make sure by the time we get off, you feel very comfortable moving forward.
Yeah. And you know, I was going to make a bunch of notes, and my husband kept asking me if I'd brought up some, or thought of some questions, and, you know, whatever. And I tried to, but I'm like, you know what? I'm not good at following notes. I'm just gonna wing it because that's just what I'm gonna do. So now I'm just sitting
way.
Here.
I'm the exact same way, by the way.
I can't design a conversation. I'm too raw of a person, so it doesn't ever work out the way I want it to anyway. So just forget it. Let me think here. I don't know, actually. See how boring I am.
But you're not boring at all. In terms of what we discussed, in terms of eating at least 300 to 500 between 8 to 10, at least 300 to 500 between 12 and 2, do you feel comfortable and confident with that?
Yes, I'm going to give that a go for, like you said, at least 6 to 8 weeks. And I'm going to maybe make some notes about how I'm feeling or what I've noticed about my hunger changing and things like that. Yeah. I'm comfortable with it. I'm just looking at my notes. I'm sorry.
No worries. I want you to really, really stick with that for at least 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
And understand that, for example, today, tomorrow, the next day, you're still probably going to be hungry at night, and that's okay. Let's just say throughout this process, you end up going over your calories. Let's say you go over your calories for a few weeks. Let's say you gain 3 to 5 pounds. Cool. Mm-hmm. If you gain 3 to 5 pounds, but you eliminate that chronic hunger, you win, because then you can lose those 3 to 5 pounds if you want without being chronically hungry.
Yeah.
So I want to set those expectations, because it, sort of going back to what we were talking about earlier, the mental side is the most important. If you make progress on a foundation of a poor mental or emotional relationship with food, then that progress will be short term. So if you kept trying to jam this square peg into a round hole, so to speak, if you kept trying to just force yourself to be hungry chronically all the time after 3 p.m., eventually it was going to backfire. Mm-hmm. So now, working from here, if you gain a few pounds back in order to eliminate that chronic hunger so that you can then lose it more sustainably, that's perfection.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, and touching on the calories, just your personal opinion, like, I know that I have, I definitely have fat to lose. I've got some belly fat, most definitely, some upper body fat, most definitely. I don't think that I have 25 pounds of fat to lose. Should I not be eating at 150 pound calorie deficit, which is 1800 calories? Because if I feel like if I eat less than that, I'm going to be really pissed off.
I don't think there's any reason to eat less than that. And okay. I think there's actually a precedent to have several days throughout the week in which you eat more than that.
Okay.
I do, for me personally, I really favor a calorie cycling approach. So okay. maybe 3 to 4 days a week, have goal body weight by, or like 150 times 12, right? And then another 3 or 4 days a week, depending on how many you choose for the low days, have maybe 165 or 170 by 12.
Okay.
So it will be slower. It will probably, rather than a pound a week, it might be closer to a quarter to half a pound a week. But again, if we can maintain that rate of loss while eliminating the chronic hunger, that's what I care most about.
Yeah, because it's super frustrating. You know, we get the kids down. We usually pop back out of the bedroom just to, you know, do dishes and all the rest of that garbage that adults don't like doing, honestly. And my husband loves cereal, Cinnamon Toast Crunch every day of the week.
Oh. The
as
best.
Much as he Fruity Pebbles is the other one, but we live in Canada, so we don't get Fruity Pebbles, but our friends did send us boxes of Fruity Pebbles most recently. So he's a cereal nut, and I didn't used to be before I met him, but coming out of the bedroom after we get the kids down doing, you know, dish things and stuff like that, and then the cereal comes out, and it's just, I'm like, oh, you're killing me here. But that's the biggest struggle, and not eating at night. Like, I like to stop eating at 8 o'clock. Usually that's the time that I because 8 to 6, I'm up at like 6:45. And like you say, with the fasting, like you've been sleeping fasting enough. As long as you're not getting up and eating in the middle of the night, like you're fine. I like to stop eating at about 8, but I'm really unsuccessful at it. Especially, we play a lot of games with our friends in Texas. We like to, they sent us the Harry Potter Clue game through Amazon.
Oh, nice. House,
and they have it. So we set up our phones and we play it together. We worked out a good system where we can play it together. And then come the Pop-Tarts, and then comes the cereal, and then comes, like, all the night snacks just come pouring out of the closets. So that definitely needs to stop.
But one thing that I found is with nighttime stuff like that, the biggest issue is when there are a multitude of options. When there's Cinnamon Toast Crunch, and there's Fruity Pebbles, and there's this, and there's that. And research shows this consistently. Like, think about it, at a buffet, someone who's going to eat dinner at a buffet is going to eat dramatically more calories than someone who just ordered one plate. The more options you have, the more calories you're going to eat. And this just is proven time and time again. It's actually why competitive eaters, the people who will, like, they've got real issues with food, let me tell you that.
Oh, my gosh.
They've got real issues. They've got real issues with food, and specifically hunger. It's terrible. And that's a road I don't even want to go down with this. Like, they really screw themselves up. But competitive eaters will, like, change foods as they're eating to try and, because the more they can change the food on their palate, the more they'll actually be able to eat. So what I say is, if you're going to have one of those nights, choose one and just, you can give yourself a limit if you'd like, but let's say I'm going to Thanksgiving dinner, for example. If I'm going to a holiday, then usually what I'll say is I can have one dessert, and I can have as much of that one dessert as I want. So if there's going to be like 12 different desserts, I can have one of them, and I can have as much of that as I want, and it will sort of help limit how many calories I eat. If it's something on a more regular basis, like I'm here with my wife, we're going to get something out of the pantry, whatever it is, I will probably put a limit on it. Like, I'm not going to say eat as many Oreos as you want, because that would be a fucking disaster. I will eat the entire thing. But, like, maybe I'll say, like, okay, I can have, I don't know, 4 to 8 Oreos, rather than, okay, I'll have a few Oreos and I'll have a bowl of cereal and I'll have this and I'll have that. Mm-hmm. Just pick one thing, and then that's what you can enjoy.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me, actually, because I you can eat 2 Pop-Tarts, and then, like you say, get up and grab a handful of Oreos, and then you can have this, and you can, the chips come out, and this comes out, and it's like you've got a brand new stomach every single time the food changes.
Exactly. That's the best way to put it. I've never heard it like that. That's the best way to put it. You have a brand new stomach for every food.
Brand new. Yeah, exactly. That's what makes specifically Thanksgiving absolute hell for me, because spaghetti dinners and Thanksgiving, those are the two dinners that I love, top of my list, tippy top of my list. And I can eat on Thanksgiving. And I, like you say, you eat and you eat and you eat like an asshole. Then 4 hours later, you're up and you're looking at the Thanksgiving dinner again, and you're giving it the eyeball, and it's 100% like a new belly. But there's so much variety. And anyway, I'm starting to crave Thanksgiving. Our Thanksgiving is in October. Yours is in November. I'm lucky because my husband's American. So I get to do October Thanksgiving and November Thanksgiving and December turkey. It just never stops. Yeah, lucky and unlucky, I guess, if you think about it that way. But yeah, it makes sense. So, like, you pick one thing and go to town until you're sick of it. And then you get sick of it much faster than I think you would if you switched out foods all the time. Perfect sense.
100%. Yep.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, do me a favor. Actually, I have one more question before we get off. And you are more than welcome to say, nope, not comfortable with that. Do you have a social media account? And if you are comfortable with it, do you want to share your account so people can reach out to you, whether just to say thank you or to just keep updated with your progress or something? Again, you do not have to say yes if you're not comfortable with it, because I guarantee you there will be a fair amount of people reaching out if you say yes. But if not, that's totally fine.
Yeah, I would. I wouldn't mind that at all. That would be great, actually. I like connecting with people, and people that are like-minded or like experienced or whatever. If I can help somebody, I want to help. So for sure. Yeah. And I don't even know what to share. Like, what do you need to know?
So what's your social media account?
Well, I've got Instagram and I've got Facebook. They'll find me just Erica Zapata on Facebook. It's E-R-I-K-A. My last name Zapata, Z-A-P-A-T-A. And I believe it's the same on Instagram, realistically, like, because I'm a part of the inner circle. I'm on there and everybody will find me on there really easily.
Perfect. And just for everyone listening, if you found this helpful, please shoot Erica a message, just at the very least to say thank you. Erica, I really, really appreciate having this conversation for many reasons. I admire your candidness, your candor, I think is actually the right word, not candidness. I admire your candor. And I'm very excited to keep up to date with your progress, but I really appreciate you being able to just come on and speak with me and speak the truth. And it means a lot. I think you're going to help many, many people.
Well, I hope so. And thank you for the opportunity to just pour my heart and guts out at you. I appreciate that. I didn't cry, which is more credit than I give myself normally. So I choked it back. I had a couple sips of coffee to get that down.
Well, thank you, Erica. This has been amazing. Have a wonderful day. Give your family my love, and I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Great. Sounds good. Take care, Jordan.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That wraps it up for this episode of the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And Erica, thank you so much for coming on and having an amazing conversation. If you'd like to join the inner circle, you can do that at the link in the show notes. And if you haven't yet left a review for the podcast, please do on iTunes. They help more than I can begin to tell you, especially the written ones. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day. I'll talk to you soon.